Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha "We are lost," the captain shouted as he staggered down the hatch. Hello, test.
Oh, it's working great. Gee whiz, have you noticed how great the station is working lately? I mean, it's on the radio and everything. You can hear it clearly. Hello, test. Hello, 1, 2, 3. Oh, it's just working beautiful. Yes, really good. Hey, listen, I want to ask before we get started here tonight a rhetorical question. Just the rhetorical, of course, purely rhetorical. That's the most nagging kind of question. Also the silliest type of question, the rhetorical question here. "We are lost," the captain shouted as he staggered down the hatch. Is that from any poem or anything? That's the question I'm asking, a serious question here, literary type question. "We are lost," the captain shouted as he staggered down the hatch. Now, my mother used to say that all the time. In fact, she says it right now. Many times when she's hanging over the sink and the old man is yelling and hollering, he throws his bowling ball down the basement steps, you know, he's having a fit, you know, kicking his shoes off and all that. She'd say under her breath, "We are lost," the captain shouted as he staggered down the hatch. Hey, what's Marty doing in there? Hey, it's just background. I don't want the whistles. Just get the background. You're going to spend the whole night in there. Hey, Marty, listen. Well, that's all right, then. Don't do anything. Put an old John Gambling tape on or something. Just don't worry about it, okay? Yes, indeed. Yeah, well, of course, you know, we're constantly bugged by that kind of thing, I tell you. We're constantly hampered by our own ineptitude. This is a maddening thing. In fact, I was looking at the Popular Mechanics today. And, once in a while I keep up with Popular Mechanics, you know. And it says, this double-page ad, and it says, get 30 days of driving on one tank of gasoline. Fantastic ad, see? And you cut this out and you send it away to Magic Gas Out Company in Olathe, Kansas, see? And you get these pills or something you put in your gas tank, and you get 30 days of driving on one tank of gas. It's the kind of stuff my old man flipped over. He believed seriously that there was a guy who lived in Fort Wayne, Indiana, who invented a pill that you put it in the gas tank and fill the gas tank with water, and the car would run for 1 year, give you over 4,000 miles to the gallon of water. But they bought him out. I mean, the bad guys, you know. They bought him out, and they gave him $50,000 to never put it on the market. He was then sent to South America, where he later disappeared under mysterious circumstances. The old man says, "Listen, I met a guy in a tavern over in Calumet City who knew the guy whose cousin did it. So don't give me that jazz." So naturally, we're afflicted by this, the sense that there is a sneaky crowd out there who is planning to take the good life away from us. Why? Because they're sneaky. That's all. Why? They're bad guys. What do you do about them? What do I do? I don't know what you're talking about in there, friend. Take the popsicle out of your mouth and maybe we'll understand it. But, of course, bad guys have always been around. One of my favorite bad guys is Big Nose George. And would you please give me a little of that Big Nose George, that stuff you couldn't find. You sneak it in there. Any of you ever heard of Big Nose George? And I was out in Cheyenne, Wyoming here a couple of weeks ago, and I'm walking through the streets of... No, friend. That stuff you couldn't find before, I said. That's it. I don't know what you got. What'd you do? Is that the John Gambling... Hey, hold it there. Easy, Dad. Now, at the Roundup cooking fires, you'll hear this ditty sung of the roaring, ripping, good old West when Big Nose George was hung. Big Nose George. Yeah, this George, he robbed the UP trains and double-crossed his pals and freely spent his stolen loot a-boozing with the gals. He liked his liquor mighty well, and it proved his downfall, too, because he boasted once when full of strong, rich, deep Montana brew. Hear them trains? Just leave them go. Come on, Marty, quit fooling around. Just leave those trains go in there, friend. The word was rushed to Caribou, and on to Carbon, too. And the sheriff and his men went up and handcuffed George and swore he'd never rob another UP train again. They took him down to Carbon, and they locked him into jail, and they turned down every offer that was made to go his bail. Yeah, a mob. They battered down the doors and drug him from his cell. and then they strung him from a post and consigned his soul to hell. Well, old Georgie got the tie ropes off his hands and off his feet beside and tried to shinny up the post, but slept and kicked and died. The doc went up and felt his heart and duly swore him dead, and with some plaster Paris made a casting of his head. It took some hide from off his chest and had it cured and tanned and made into a pair of shoes that always used to stand right there in his office window. Well, they planted George that night, and on the brush around his grave there fell an awful blight. No green stuff grew there anymore, not a bit. He pisoned up the prairie. My pa, he went to see it once and said it sure was scary. So at the roundup cooking fires, you'll hear this ditty song of the fighting, lynching good old West. When Big George, Big Nose George, was hung until he was dead. And you know they did make a pair of shoes out of his hide? And you can see the hide of Big Nose George and the shoes that was made from that stinking, miserable, poisonous polecat hide. You can see that hide sitting there right now at this very moment in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Right there in the doctor's window. As a lesson to all of you. Bring it up there, please, Marty. Sound of a couple of switch engines working never did a man's soul any harm. Bring it up. You are listening to the sound of two steam switch engines switching near the big roundhouse hump just south of Rollins, Wyoming. This is where man lives on chewing tobacco. Hey, by the way, I have never seen a chewing tobacco spot on television yet. You know? Shot with one of these cute little gals, you know, the one that hollers, take it off, you know? You know that one house, take it off? That's going to be a little irritating. All right, you can kill it there. Thank you very much, Marty. Isn't that exciting? A lot of things exciting. Although I've often thought of spots. How many of you have fantasies that involve great commercials you'd like to see, but never will see on TV? I mean, real commercials for real stuff. You know, there's a scene there that shows this gal's face. She looks right at you. It's a woman libs type, you know, woman lib type. Kind of a well-cropped guardsman mustache scene. She looks out at you and she says, 8-hour cut apple plug. And you hear her ringing a bell, gong, and then a shot, quick shot of a spittoon. So all the girls down at the club chew it, and we get 30% greater accuracy with 8-hour cut apple plug. Boing. I can think of a few others. Incidentally, speaking of Big George, you know, I'm a sucker, though, for this kind of thing. I got a letter here from a kid. He says, Shepard, Marty, please, quit interrupting the don't feed the zoo when we're working here, Skip. I got a note from a kid. He says, Shepard, please send me a note on how I can play the Jew's harp. That's a silly, sad letter. Many, many, kid, are called. Damn few are chosen. Just the way it stands. Also got a letter from another guy. It says, Shepard, originally the story in Playboy, please send me a note on how I can learn how to write stories. Oh, please. Please. Of course, I'll admit that we all have this deep feeling deep down inside of us. Each one of us has this feeling that if only the breaks had gone right, we could have been almost anything. Scratch almost any one of 42,000 chicks I know, and you are scratching the hide of a latent actress. In fact, every girl believes that if she hadn't married Big Fred or old Howie, she would have gone on to be in the actor's studio, and God knows where it would have ended. Scratch any guy that I know, and he'll tell you that if I hadn't made that bad mistake that night after the prom in Keokuk High, well, I might have gone on, you know, I was a pretty good left-hander. But what are you going to do, you know? Next thing you know, I'm working in the insurance office, she's pregnant and the whole bit. All right. And this, you know, the spring is eternal. This goes all the way back to Orestes, who figured if things had broken right, he'd have made a really good king. I mean, look at Hamlet. He figured, you know, he wanted to be king, for crying out loud. That's what he was bugged about, actually, when all was said and done. He was just mad. You know, never made king. Yeah. Now, there's no telling what kind of king he'd have made had he got in, you know. Gotten elected. We don't know what kind of congressman Barry's going to make. Doesn't matter. Oh, no. No, no. Oh, no. They laughed at George Washington, believe me. I mean, there were guys that were in George Washington's platoon in the early days of the Indian fighting. They says, you mean to tell me George Washington? Are you kidding? With wooden teeth? President? Well, all right. Where are those guys that worked in his platoon? Well, they're still on the grease trap in the sky, the great eternal yard bird detail that all yard birds draw when the ultimate bugle is blown, right? That's right. Oh, yeah, listen, any GI, when you walk up to many people, like insurance man, you walk up to an insurance man, and you say to an insurance man, though, quick, tell me what do you think, what do you see, quick, when I say heaven. Well, how do you think he sees heaven, an insurance man? Well, he sees heaven as 400,000 clients, all of whom have a life expectancy of 500 years, all of whom have bought life insurance and are paying $200 a week premiums. That's heaven, see? All right, how does a GI see heaven? Speaking of heaven, this is WOR, friends, New York. Hi, George. Amazing. That's a word association, of course. You know, I immediately thought, when you mentioned heaven, I immediately thought of the 23rd floor. I thought of the air conditioning unit in my office. Talks to me. Once in a while, a memo comes out of it. It's very romantic. I mean, a lot of romantic things. Have you noticed how romantic our world is getting? Oh, really? No. Almost all the, practically all extremists are radicals. And I might say, no matter whether the left or right, they're radical, but they're romantic. They have a vision of paradise. Of course, the paradise involves everybody being like them. That is a paradisical realization, you know, that you can imagine. Well, can you imagine what it would be like if everybody was like you? I mean, really was like you. Be an exciting world, wouldn't it? Well, so this, you know, this romantic concept is beginning to creep in every place you go. Everything is romantic today. There's nothing that's prosaic. Nothing. I mean, even, deodorant is very romantic. Oh, you notice those fantastic romantic spots now for deodorant? Oh, yes. Lovers must be sure. Poof. Very romantic. They never mention, of course, that the what they're fighting is the very antithesis of romance, but that's all right, it's romantic. Cigarettes are romantic. Oh, yeah. You know, the guitar comes on, doom, doom, doom. At last, a cigarette for the two of you. Dee, dee, dee. There's one thing at last that you two can share. And you can hear some broken coughing in the middle distance. I don't know what it is you're about to share, but I hate to think about it. Everything is romantic. For example, the chevron spot. Is there anything as non-romantic as gasoline? I mean, gasoline is about as prosaic a product as you can find. It's stinky. Yeah, and you get it on the knees of your knickers and it stains. It smells. But listen to the romantic spot about it.
All packed, Harriet?
Did you get some money?
Nope.
How can we go without money?
We'll just use our Chevron National Credit Card.
Do we sleep on a gas pump?
Now, wait. That Chevron card is good at Howard Johnson's Motor Lodges, Ramada Inns, Master Host Inns, and Hertz Car Rentals. I can charge gas, oil, and repairs at Chevron service stations across the country.
Wow. Don't Chevron stations look like tropical islands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you can keep your promise.
So exciting. Huh?
You always said you'd take me to the island.
Oh. Nothing like seeing a Chevron station approaching through the purple haze of twilight. Oh, it's so exciting to get back home, where life is beautiful and true. Now there's one concept, the exciting concept of gasoline, Chevron Island. That's a romantic concept. Now, Let's take Dr. Pepper. You got the Dr. Pepper set up in there? Listen to the romantic content of this one. They don't tell you whether it tastes good or not. The concept of Dr. Pepper coming into the new... It's romantic in the frontiersman sense. I mean breaking new ground. Establishing a beachhead on alien shores. This brave, hard-fighting soft drink. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Ba 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 ba. Yeah, yeah. Ba ba ba.
Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Ba 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 ba.
Dr. Pepper. It's so good. Dr. Pepper.
Ba ba ba.
Dr. Pepper may be America's most misunderstood soft drink.
Now, there's a romantic idea right there. And there isn't one of you out there can tell me what specialty Dr. Pepper had. What was he? Well, all right. I mean, you just accept these things. What about Dr. Brown? Remember old Doc Brown and the celery tonic? What do you think he took his major in? He didn't major in celery tonic, I can tell you that. Dr. Fu Manchu, what was his major? I mean, he didn't, you know, that wasn't an honorary doctorate that he had. It was a serious, solid doctorate, Dr. Fu Manchu. I will award a brass figurine with bronze oak leaf palm to any of you literate types out there who can tell me it is mentioned briefly in one book what Dr. Fu Manchu took his doctorate in and where he took his undergraduate work. You would not believe it. Dr. Fu Manchu, evil incarnate, the desire which is basic to all of us to roll and control the entire world. Yeah, play with it like putty in your hands. There's an ad, for example, at 23rd Street in the subway for this karate school. You see this karate school? It shows this guy. And he has given this chick a clip on the Adam's apple like you wouldn't believe. Says, learn to protect yourself. He's belting this girl right in the old, you know, right in the old gullet there. What a shot. And I thought to myself, well, this again is this part of this desire to improve man's, you know, status in the world, where he stands. And I'll tell you, I must admit that one of the most embarrassing moments I ever had in my life came when I was euchred, you know, you know, we learn about money early in our life. I don't care what society you live in, whether you live in Polynesia, friend, when you're out of wampum, you're out of wampum. You are walking low. You are, it's Tap City. Well, I'm a kid, see, and I have been saving my dough. And, of course, being a kid, I have this infinite sense of ahead of me lies a beautiful golden brick road that is going to eventually lead to at least the Emerald City. And who knows where, that's only the beginning, you know, from there on in, it's all the way, you know. And every day, I come into the house and I fool around after the ball game, playing ball, you know, in the afternoon. And I have saved $2.75, give or take a couple of cents, right? And that, represents my life. How many of you have ever been wiped out in your life? I mean, wiped out. I mean, literally wiped out financially. Oh, no, I don't mean how many times you've been broke. I mean when you've had a, you know, you've got this thing in your hand. You're well off. In other words, you got it. And you've been wiped out. It is a sobering experience. Especially when you do it yourself, you know. Barnum lived in the 19th century, so things were different in the 19th century. He did not anticipate the population explosion. And I would say Barnum is wrong by, I would say roughly there's 2 to 3 born every second now, roughly, as opposed to 1 every minute. Of course, you see again, you know, man doesn't always look as far ahead as he should, and I'm not putting Barnum down. He's a good man. He knew where it was. He did, man. He sure did. And, you know, he played it for all it was worth. Any of you out there ever heard of the Cardiff Giant? You heard of him? No. Come on. I'm not talking about wrestling on Channel 7. I'm talking about something else. Now, come on. Cut it out. I'm discussing something that's very serious. You see, I'm tonight this is an intellectual show, and we're dealing with intellectual concepts. And I must expect a modicum of cooperation out there. How about anybody? You want to play charades tonight? If there's anything that makes me mad, oh, I hate that scene. To come to this idiotic party out on Long Island, and there's always a tall, skinny lady with a burlap skirt, and she makes her own ashtrays. And you know this type? Wears things on her wrist that jingle all the time. She went to Mexico once, and she's always talking about when she was in Mexico. She's got this bronze skin, and she loves to play charades. This, of course, that probably describes her life better than anything else, so no wonder she does. However, that's something else. Speaking of chutzpah, did you ever run into people who send their friends about, on an average of every 2 months, a mimeographed round-robin letter of their activities and their family? Ever seen that time? It says, "Hi, gang. I'm sure that all of you heard what happened to Ken lately. He's been promoted again. And, of course, little Charlie and Fred have got new knickers, and it's so exciting here. And we don't have time to write all of you personally, but..." And you get this round-robin letter. I mean, you really believe that people are that interested in your life? Do you? I mean, I'm going to ask even more of a leading question. Are you interested in your life? Be careful before you answer that. I think anybody that's hung on movies isn't interested in his life. I think this is also a problem with the compulsive readers. You know, people who, no matter what they're doing, they got to be reading. They're reading the labels on Mazda light bulbs, you know, when they're riding in the subway. You know, that kind of thing. You've got to constantly keep yourself away from yourself. And no wonder. It's because of the silly, idiotic things that often we have done in the past, which cling to us like barnacles of embarrassment and failure. Oh, I bet there's many a grown-up guy walking around today, you know, big, serious grown-up guy, who can remember one, and you wake him up at 3 a.m. and you wake up, "What are you doing? Get off my back, will you?" Why? Because he was cut from a ball club in high school. Girls don't have this. Very few girls, and they don't understand it. Not many girls have ever been, you know, actually cut. Go back out there to the weeds and then handing out the uniforms to the guys that make it. Yeah. And the exciting moment of getting a uniform, where they actually hand you one. It says number 12 on the back. That's another story. And so we all have these secret, insensate dreams, like the wreck of the Hesperus, floating eternally. No. Somebody says that he took his degree from the University of London in toxicology. And someone else called up that he took his degree in English from UCLA. The last one is closer. But he did not take his degree from the University of London in toxicology. Not at all. That's what you would expect Dr. Fu Manchu to have majored in. How many of you know what toxicology is? Well, you can't take a degree in that, you know. No, I'll keep this to myself, because when I discovered this, it was a shock. And it made me a suspicious person for the rest of my life. I wish I could be romantic. I really do. Unfortunately, I am. No, there's a difference between romantic and idealist. No, an idealist is something else. An idealist has bigger problems. A romantic keeps thinking the best. Like, you know, he says, "Oh, I don't know. Let's wait and see when he gets in. We'll see what he does when he, you know, he's just getting elected now. Let's see what happens when he gets in." That's a romantic. An idealist sees people coming out of great vast clouds, surrounded by billowing dreams and beautiful concepts, eternal verities, and a pure soul. A soul so pure that Axion couldn't touch it. I mean, this is the Eugene McCarthy complex. Bump-a-dump-bump. Oh, yeah. This is something else. That's another scene. But I came in this day. I'll never forget it. This is a sad story. You're about to hear one. And it relates to the kid who wrote me and said, Shepard, teach me how to play the Jew's harp. I can't. There's a thing called talent. One does not learn talent. One has talent. One is born with talent. It's as simple as that. I'm sorry. You'll have to accept it, Marty. There's many a guy who's tested that who's walking around today with shaky molars in the front who tried to play around with a Jew's harp when he shouldn't have got near it. Absolutely. Well, I discovered that whole thing of talent. I come home one day, see, not realizing I'm about to be euchred. And the radio was playing on the sink. My mother had a radio on the sink, you know, under the cupboards in the kitchen. It's playing away there. And she's walking around with the dishes in her hand. The radio's playing, and I'm sitting down knocking together a salami sandwich. Now, I had a particular salami sandwich I always made. For those of you who have never made this salami sandwich, I'd like to recommend it. Now, I seriously would. Don't laugh. No. The trouble with the American is that he is quite often very, very well, I should say not only the American people. They are very unadventurous when food is concerned. Oh, yes, many a guy will say with a note of Christian pride in his voice, I'm a meat and potatoes man, as if that's somehow a special virtue, you know, being a meat and potatoes man. I don't eat nothing but steak and mashed potatoes and once in a while some canned peas. Virtue. There speaks the voice of the slob, loud and clear, heard throughout the land. So do not laugh. Do not laugh when I recommend various adventuresome dishes. For example, take soft, plain, ordinary kosher salami. I mean the kind, you know, real ripe salami. You know what I mean? I love salami. As a matter of fact, I've often wondered why they don't bring out salami popsicles and, you know, salami-flavored soft drink. And all. I love salami. All right, you take plain, ordinary, soft, kosher salami, you know, the Union Hebrew National type. You've seen this kind of really groovy salami, right? All right, you cut a fairly decent slice. Put it between two thin slices of white bread, which have been buttered. Let's say put it sparsely buttered, because it's important. All right? And the top slice has been thinly larded with strawberry jam. Now, there you go. See? He's the same guy that goes down and eats sweet and sour shrimp down at the Ho Chi Minh's or something. That's the same concept. That's yin and yang, friend. Think carefully before you laugh. That's right. The voice of the slob will out. He will not only laugh, he will snort and walk on, and you'll see him turning left at Needick's. He's in there knocking down another hot dog. Okay, that's all right with me. I'm pro-hot dog. I think they should bring out the hot dog-flavored martinis. I like hot dogs. Okay, I am in the kitchen, innocent. Remember, I got $2.75 in the kick, my total life savings, which have been derived from working my paper route now. In fact, I was born to be 7 feet tall at least. But if I hadn't, you know, put on so many miles every morning delivering the Chicago Tribune with the wind blowing against me and Airedales biting me on the shins and all that stuff, you know, day after day, hour after hour, well, you know, you get worn down. It's erosion, they call it. That's right. It wasn't smoking that stunted my growth because I never smoked. It was Airedales. But that's something else. I don't want to get into that. I don't want to offend the Airedale clique out there. And boy, are they fanatics. Whew. They're worse than the poodle clique. Talk about cuckoos. Wow. But I have no brief for Newfoundlands, Airedales, Doberman Pinschers, the whole sorry lot. No, because I fought them day after day after day. Listen, there was a Doberman Pinscher. Now, that's an evil dog. Do you know anything about Doberman Pinschers? Evil mother, I'll tell you. There was a Doberman Pinscher that used to wait. Every morning I would be delivering the Chicago Tribune, riding on my Elgin bicycle at 5:40 in the morning, and that son of a gun would wait at the top of a landing, see, and he would he must have been able to see me in a mirror or something up there, because I couldn't see him. and I would approach this landing scene. I'm about to throw this paper up sideways, and he would hit me. He always get me at these deflection shots. He would come from suddenly out of the left behind me, like say at the, oh, like 7 o'clock. You know, if you're going to use a bomber terminology, he would come out of the darkness at 7 o'clock. Fighters at 7 o'clock, zap! Oh, man. And I used to get him with, I developed a good backhand kick. I used to, real quick, see, because we were recognized adversaries. I mean, there was not, because I, you know, when you're a fighter, you recognize another one. It's one thing about fighting, that you recognize a worthy adversary. And I bore no ill will to this Doberman Pinscher, whose name, by the way, was Ralph. I bore no ill will to Ralph, and he bore none to me. It was a daily contest. That was all. Some days I'd win, some days he'd win. But when I'd win, man, what a great feeling. You see, I'd see him suddenly launched in the air. See, and I'd catch him out of the corner of my eye. He would be coming in at, let's say, 2 o'clock. He's coming in, see, out of the darkness. He'd be swinging down from a catalpa tree. He'd come in out of darkness, his mouth wide open, and I would wait. See, I would pretend like I don't see him. See, I'm riding along, I got the paper, and I would just wait, just a minute, his jaws are open, and I would give him a shot right under the left mandible, so quick, so clean, and so nice with my kids. I would catch him, you see, in the middle of his arc, just when he was vulnerable. I remember him backing up high in the air, you know, you'd catch him, his gut shying in the air, you know, his feet going like that, and the wild look of total defeat in his, you know, his eyeballs. I'd fling the trib, on I'd go, see, and I'd hear him yapping in the background, cursing the fates. And, of course, the next day, it would be the other way around. He'd catch me, you know, he'd come in at, say, 5:30, you know, come in clean and low, and just rip the, well, I'll tell you, I don't even talk about that. But, of course, these are the things that change a man's life. And so one day after a hard, you know, I delivered the Chicago Herald Examiner at night, see. So I've come in after a day at, you know, throwing the papers and doing all this stuff. Kitchen, sit down, I knock together a salami sandwich. Oh, great salami sandwich. I'm eating a salami sandwich. And, of course, I'm wide open, see, for almost anything at this point. The milk of human kindness is flowing like a vast river. You know, just flowing like, oh, you know. And I'm just sitting there wallowing in good humor and a whole bit. I got $2.75 and a kick. You know, and I'm beginning to think that maybe Esther Jane Albury is actually noticing that I'm alive, you know, and everything is working out good. When all of a sudden the radio, which I rarely paid much attention to, I was not a radio fan, I might tell you that right now. Without any warning, the radio, this guy comes on, and he's playing a piano. He goes, and I'm paying no attention. I'm chewing away at the salami. And all of a sudden, he says, "Friends, would you like to amaze and mystify your acquaintances with your immense talent? The next party that you attend, would you like to amaze and astound them by sitting down at the Steinway and playing just like this, loud and clear, beautiful?" Yes. Both right hand and left hand you will be able to play. You'll notice the bass, the walking, moving bass, the clean, sharp right hand. Just 7 minutes a day for one day a week. Within 1 month, you will be able to play music just exactly like this. With our new Magic 4-Color Slide Rule Piano Chord Device. Patent pending. You don't even need a piano in your house to learn to play this way. Every night you sit down in front of this beautiful 4-color device and practice these chords. They're all numbered. You don't need not even have to know how to read music. Talent is not necessary. So I'm sitting there and says, "Oh my God, that's the answer. That is the answer." I can see old Shep, you know, showing up at the gym. You know, where they had the piano that they used to play, you know, they put a piano in volleyball games and all that stuff. Casually sitting down. God, listen to Shepard. Yes, for just $1.95.
for $1.95, this magic slide rule four-color, number-coded musical device will be yours. And for the first 20 people who buy this device today, an autographed copy of Dave Minor's album of familiar piano classics will be sent to you.
Well, I want to tell you, I began to break out in a sweat. You can just reset that, Marty. They all sound the same. I began to break out in a fantastic sweat. Well, now, at first, you see, I thought about this. You see, this is the problem with, if you're a born sucker, and I must admit that I am a sucker, I will hit like a smallmouth bass in rutting season. Man, anytime they throw that plug at my direction, I'll go. So, you know, but the thing about being a really good sucker is that you like to believe that everything you do, you arrive at through solid, sound reasoning. You really do. I wonder how many guys are driving unbelievably, ridiculously, giant turkeys of automobiles. And they believe that they actually seriously thought it out, and this is what they wanted. Oh, no, there was a moment of total weakness, and the next thing you know, down the chute you went. Well, I went out, see, and I'm looking around. Schwartz had been taking accordion lessons. Now, Schwartz, because of his accordion lessons, was, you know, he was beginning to get a little action around the neighborhood. Schwartz would bring out his $600 accordion, which his uncle from Indianapolis had bought him. This fantastic accordion had sequins all over it, and had his name written on the side of it. It said Schwartz in green sequins. Well, you know, I was not in a family where they, you know, there was no music in my family whatsoever. Well, it was music, but it was the soul music. It was music of beating truth. The heart of humanity, that kind of music. Oh, yes, we had plenty of truth. Oh, listen, my old man used to be very truthful. He used to say very truthful things about what he thought about my mother. And that my mother would say truthful things about what she thought about him. There's truth, absolute truth. I mean, it was, you know, you often wind up in fist fighting and yelling and people, you know, falling down the basement stairs. But it was true, very true. Okay, so there was plenty of human soul music in our house, but not the... Well, nobody had ever played anything in our house. I mean, you know, musical instrument. So I went out, I'm thinking about this. $1.95. Well, I got $2.75 and a kick. It's taken me 7 years now to save that. What the hell? Yeah? I thought about that. Thought more about it. And then I began to have these fantasies, which we all have. I mean, listen, you know the kind of fantasies that Woody Allen is continually having? These are nightclub fantasies. This has nothing to do with real-life fantasies, nothing. You know, the business of being Humphrey Bogart, this is ridiculous. Nothing to do with life. I don't know anybody who ever dreamed he was Humphrey Bogart. But I do know plenty of guys who dreamed, just a fugitive dream, of magically, somehow, mysteriously. I mean, they're in this gay group of people. And suddenly, you know, just sitting down, casually, just sitting down. So, you know, just knocking off a couple of tunes here. Rick-tick-ting-ting-ting-ting, you know. People are amazed. They said, my God, I never knew you could play Clarence. Something I picked up. You don't mind if I tap dance while I do this too, do you? Oh yeah, this is not a fantasy. This is a human dream. It's different than a fantasy. And speaking of fantasies, friends, we would like to recommend that you get your $2 in the mail now. See, I'm playing the part of Dave Minor tonight. And if you want to bring deep, rich satisfaction to your otherwise drab, mud-bound life, you send $2 in scratch, $2 in money order or check to Year One, 460, and I repeat, 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York. And my God, your life will unfold like an unbelievable flower out of the far jasmine-scented east. For a miserable $2. What are you waiting for, you clod? Well, I'm just asking. It's a rhetorical question. What are you waiting for? All right, get that $2 in the mail right now. Check or money order to Year One, 460 West 34th Street, New York, New York. Year One, money back if not satisfied. Your money will be sent back immediately if you're not at least 6 inches taller after you get this thing. Immediately. That's right. Well, I sent $1.95. Hint to somebody named... Has anyone ever heard of him? Did you ever hear of the... Anybody know the name? Did you ever hear the name Dave Miner? Dave Miner. Piano courses. $1. And I was ashamed. You know, we're always vaguely ashamed to admit we're trying to learn to play something. So I sent this $1.95 in. And every day, you know, I'm coming home looking at the mailbox. And I never told anybody at the house, see? Nobody. I figured, you know, a couple of minutes after I get this thing, they would, you know, that would be time to let them know when I'm sitting down, you know, and the piano is roaring out of the gym, you know, and I'm playing like Billy be damned, you know, where the people are crawling around on their bellies, you know, weeping and yelling with admiration. I'm just knocking it up, and Esther Jane Albury is coming up to kiss my kneecaps of my knickers, you know. Oh, man, I'm playing. And I'd be absolutely cool about it. Don't worry about it. Any of you guys can learn to play this. All right, thank you. No, no. Hold it. That's enough piano. Hold it, Marty. $1.95 I sent. $1.95. Took me 17,922 miles of my paper out to earn that. Over 248 Doberman pincer bites. Even some nights at 3 in the morning, I feel an ache where Ralph one time got me on my left calf. A beautiful shot. Oh, that was a beauty. Oh, yeah. 3 weeks later, I received a magic four-color slide rule device. It was made out of cardboard. It had keys painted on it. Well, what did I mean? You know, I didn't know what it was going to be made of, but it was. It was made out of cardboard. And I remember sitting at the kitchen table trying to play number 3 and number 5, which was the first part of a tune called My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean, which is what they were trying to teach me to play by this thing. My old man walks in and says, "What are you doing, stupid?" I said, "Well, I'm learning to play the piano." He says, "You out of your bird? Did you send for one of them things?" I said, yeah. Well, I don't have to, I just don't have to tell you the total depth of my complete violent embarrassment. I mean, dynamic embarrassment. My kid brother, he laughed when he saw that thing so hard. Well, one of his tennis shoes fell off. He laughed so hard. The word got out in the neighborhood that Shepard sent for a magic slide rule device. Guys used to sneak up behind me and make sounds like they were playing pianos. You could hear them, you know. You'd hear the sound of pianos. Oh, shut up, you idiot. Thank you. So don't tell me about talent, kid. You